A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Circa's 2026 football contests are open, and you don't have to live in Las Vegas to play after your required in-person registration. Winner Circle Proxy handles your weekly submissions so you can make your picks from anywhere in the country. Winner Circle Proxy, VSiN's preferred proxy service. One trip to Vegas, play all season long from anywhere. Schedule your appointment now at winnercircleproxy.com. Well, closing the roof mattered for a minute, but then it didn't. Mira Andreeva, just comprehensive defeat of Marta Kostyuk. It's a very tennis term, by the way.
Sound very English.
Comprehensive defeat of Marta Kostyuk. And Mira Andreeva, the 18-year-old Russian, is headed to the Roland Garros final. She's the first teenager to make the Roland Garros final on the ladies' side since Coco did it several years back. We're just talking to Zach off air, and we'll just point this out. We're not a political show. We're apolitical. Marta Kostyuk is from, by the way, that kills our second tier future on Kostyuk as well. Kostyuk is from Ukraine. Andreeva is from Russia. Kostyuk, understandably, right, as Ukraine just gets repeated bombings daily, still after all these years, unprovoked, right? Has this stance where she won't shake hands with Russian players. The only problem is that Mira Andreeva is 18 years old, and it's a little, I don't know what the word is. It's a little odd to do that to an 18-year-old kid who is like this sweet, you know, this young lady.
It's an awkward situation.
It's awkward, but it's like, okay, you're going to do it to the kid also.
Yeah. I get it.
Zach Cohen joins us. I don't know if he has any geopolitical takes on this. Let's not do that, but it is a little odd, isn't it, Zach?
Yeah, that's about as far as I'll go with it. I just think it's unfair to Andreeva, who is just like seemingly the nicest and sweetest girl ever. And like her hobbies are all like that of like an 11-year-old kid. Like she just seems like so nice to have to deal with that. Just doesn't seem fair.
She plays with Legos.
Yeah.
Kostyuk is snubbing her at the net.
Yeah.
All right. Well. Yeah. So anyway, we lose on that one. I have Maya Hwalinska still to come as a big dog. You do as well, Zach.
Yeah, I took her yesterday, plus 162. I would still take her today. I think it's down to like plus 140-ish. But I just feel like the gap isn't that large between her and Schneider. I know that this is a player that is relatively unproven at the WTA level, but 5 clay court titles at the lower levels of women's tennis since 2024. I think she plays a really intriguing game on the clay, just with like moon balls and drop shots and all that stuff. Like, I just feel like she could get to Schneider a little bit because Schneider is going to be playing with all the pressure in the world on her shoulders. You're expected to beat a player that's outside of the top 100. It's all house money for Hwalinska, and I do think this is a really good price. So I ended up jumping on it. I wouldn't play it too big. It's a big enough payout that if you want to take it, you could probably even go a half unit if you want, but I know this is the right play here. And I took Andreeva to win the title before the match against Kostyuk. And I said, whichever way you're leaning in that match, just go for the extra juice and, you know, take them to win the title. Because I did think the winner of that match would be heavily favored over the winner of the next one.
I think you are correct in that. Either way that it would have gone, that would be the case. And as much as I love Hwalinska, this would, I don't know. Now, I'm not sure. I won't say it. I'll stop. I was about to say I wouldn't take her against Kostyuk, which I know I wouldn't. I'm not sure about the final. We'll see. Let's get through this one first. Well, it's against Schneider about to start. Anything on the men's side tomorrow in the semis?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little chalky, but I'm going to parlay Kobali to win against Arnaldi with Menchik to win a set against Zverev. I think that Kobali is just a much better player than Arnaldi. I think they're actually pretty similar and that they're both kind of baseline grinders, but I think that Kobali transitions from defense to offense much easier. And I think Kobali now has to be thinking about the possibility of actually winning this tournament. I don't think Arnaldi's there. I think Arnaldi's probably ecstatic just to be in the semifinals. Like, he is not supposed to be at this stage of a major. I mean, Kobali really isn't either, at least not yet, but I think in the future, this is a player we think might be able to do it. And it's not that surprising that he's there compared to Arnaldi. But in the Menchik-Zverev match, I wish I could say that Menchik could actually win the match outright. They're just like the same player to me. And I think that, you know, Menchik comes in with way more mileage on his body throughout the course of this tournament. Zverev has done a really good job of winning and winning fast, which no one else in this tournament has done. So as Zverev kind of tries to win his first major, that's one major advantage he's given himself over the entire field, is that he has played very little tennis. So his body is as fresh as can be. So he's ready to go. He's ready to extend rallies as he always does. And he's ready to play kind of that boring style of tennis that wins him matches against everybody but Carlos Alcaraz and Jannik Sinner.
And to answer your question earlier, Kelly, I think they're both properly priced tomorrow. Zverev is a $4 favorite over Mencik. Kobole, a -244 favorite over Arnaldi. I think they're both justifiable favorites of that size. To the national, before we do last tennis question, grass season, how do you approach that? Do you start right from the beginning? Do you wait on it a couple weeks, a few weeks? How do you do things?
I start right from the beginning. As soon as we have ATP and WTA level events, I'm in on it. I haven't had anything yet in like Birmingham or anything, but I mean, that's because there's been like rain delays and stuff. And I just can't bring myself to get stuck with like a bet that lasts 3 days. I need to like see a clearer forecast and feel a little bit better about it. So waiting a little bit there, but I will be jumping in on, you'll have tennis bets will be over on the picks page for sure.
Yeah. Okay. The very brief grass season, Wimbledon will be here in a few weeks. That's all you need to know. Knicks and Spurs last night. Knicks game one win, 105-95. We went through all the sort of historical context of what the Knicks continue to do now beyond the Eastern Conference, right? At least into game one. And the question I ask Kelly, I'll ask of you at the top, which is, what of that last night? What's the takeaway? Is it for you, okay, this is something we're likely to see moving forward, or you know what? This was the game that I thought the Knicks had the best chance of winning. It could have gone either way at the end. The Knicks got the flourish, and it's just a one. It's one and only thing. I don't know that it necessarily carries over.
I think it does carry over only in that if you're the Spurs, you need to be very aware that this Knicks team is never going to quit. I think that should be very obvious from what we saw when they lost to the Cavaliers. I mean, when they beat the Cavaliers down whatever that was in game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, this is not a team that you can start to kind of rest a little bit when you're up 14, 15 points. And in the third quarter, the Knicks came storming back really quickly. You need to continue to execute against this team at all times. The Knicks are really, really feisty, and they have multiple players that could beat you. I mean, last night, I know that Brunson's getting the credit for what he did in the fourth quarter. It was Carl Anthony Towns in the third quarter that saved New York. I thought that he actually played one of the best games that we've seen him play in a Knicks jersey. And look, we've kind of talked about that matchup going into the series a lot. Wembanyama versus Cat can't win that matchup if you want to win the series and you're the Spurs. And I think he won it last night.
You think about like the average Knicks fan, and I think I'm on pretty solid ground in saying this. When they made their big, right, what they called a big free agency splash and they got Brunson, there were so many Knicks fans who were like, oh, really? That's who you guys got? Brunson. And then the Cat trade, right, where Julius Randle goes the other direction. They hated that trade. Many did as well. And yet here we are. I think you pointed out, or someone pointed out, James Dolan sort of looks like, hey, look, everything that we did is working out so wonderfully. It's now you can't criticize what the franchise has done. Here we are. But it just shows you that some franchises, things work out and some fan bases don't know a damn thing. And then they sort of act like, yeah, this is what we always wanted. It's going to be interesting here because this becomes the proverbial must win situation for the Spurs in game two. Do you have a play in that game?
So not yet. I think that I might take the over. I think that it's gone a little bit too low. I still think that what we saw in game one was a fast paced game where shots just weren't going in. And I do think San Antonio especially is going to shoot the three ball better. I think that it was a really ugly first game for them from beyond the arc. This is not a team that I think is great when it comes to shooting the three ball, but I thought they got enough quality looks to shoot 30%+ if the same looks were kind of given to them again. And the Knicks, they did a really good job of taking care of the ball. So their possessions were way up when you look at that and what they did on the offensive glass. But I think these are just two really good offensive teams that want to play fast. So I'd be surprised if we see more low scoring games in the 200 range again. I just don't see it.
Spurs go up to a 6-point favorite in game two. We just saw this right in the OKC San Antonio series. This is very zigzaggy how it goes with historical trends, why the home team now becomes an even larger favorite. You agree with that move?
I would in a normal situation, but I don't think that this Knicks team falls for that stuff. Like, yeah. I feel like New York is the type of team to go into a game two and view it as an opportunity to win and go back to New York with a 2-0 lead. I think a lot of other teams would kind of rest and realize like, oh, we've done our job. We've taken home court advantage. I know that's not something that you actually go in saying, but like subliminally or like in the back of your mind, it's there and it impacts the way you play. I think there will be desperation from the Spurs, but I don't feel like the zigzag theory applies to this Knicks team. I think we've seen that now multiple series in a row in Cleveland, especially.
If you are wondering, and I was, has any NBA team ever come back to win an NBA Finals down 2-0, having lost the first two games at home? The answer is it has never happened. It has never happened.
I know one team that blew a 2-0 lead in the NBA Finals that I root for.
Who would that be?
Phoenix Suns.
The Phoenix Suns. That's right. Phoenix Suns. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you are looking to put your World Cup knowledge to the test, you put it to the test at your request, Kelly.
Whoa.
Rock you out of your moccasins. If you want to put it to the test at the highest level, this one's for you. Splash Sports offering $1 million guaranteed in a high-stakes survivor contest. $1,000 to enter, $1 million on the line. You can only use a team once. Pick wisely from the group stage all the way through the knockout rounds and outlast everyone else, and the million is yours. Right now, new players using promo code VSIN get a 50% deposit match up to $100. Free quick picks entry up to $20 plus a 100% quick picks payout boost on an entry up to $20. Entries close June 11th. Don't wait. Head to splashsports.com/VSIN. Use code VSIN. Got to be 21 and over. Available in select states only. What did we decide? We can't enter this officially. But are we going to fill out a bracket?
We're going to do our own mock version on Monday.
On Monday.
We're going to absorb all of the fine knowledge that Paul Carr and Chris Felica are going to drop on us here over the next couple days. And then you and I are going to sit here on Monday and act like every word we say is our own. Didn't come from Paul and Chris. And this is how we're going to film out.
Well, you may act that way, but I am going to give
Paul. Nobody said Colombia was going to win this group out here besides me.
Yeah, by the way, the format, group stage, you got to select four teams you believe will advance the round of 32. All four of your teams must successfully advance for you to survive. Oh, if one of them loses, you're done.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that should be easy, though, right? Because everybody's getting in except for what, like...
Wait, hold on. Like, is it win the group or just advance?
Just advance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, easy, but you probably need to get a little brave there. Picking some teams that you don't want to then go further.
Well, that's the whole key. So there's 48 teams. What did we say? 32 get through? Is that what we say? Yeah. So 60, only 16 get knocked out. So you should be able to do it, but you're right. That's the key. You have to save those that you think will go further. The knockout stage, you have to pick one team per round, except in the round of 32, round of 16, quarterfinals, where you must pick two.
I like it.
All picks in a round must win for you to advance. Any incorrect pick eliminates you. Picks can earn the win in regulation, overtime, or shootout. There you go.
I got one NBA update real quick before we get to Paul. Actually, two updates real quick. Major League Baseball, Aaron Judge has been ruled out for tonight, dealing with that injury. So I guess that's a problem. Just wanted to mention that. Did just come across my screen. And then Tim Reynolds from the Associated Press. Update from an NBA spokesman on the person who ran out onto the court.
Oh,
quote,
yeah.
The individual who entered the court area during game one of the finals was arrested and will be banned for life from all NBA arenas. A second individual will also receive a lifetime ban for his role in the incident. Good job, NBA.
Now, is that worth it, that kid? You're banned from NBA arenas for life.
It's probably the first NBA game he ever went to.
So for the rest of his days on Earth, and I know it may not seem like a big deal, but for the rest of his days on Earth, he cannot even consider going into an NBA arena. Stupid. Paul Carr joins us now, everybody, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Follow him on Twitter at Paul Carr, C-A-R-R. He's with True Media Networks, where he is the czar of everything, I believe is his title. Paul joins us now to discuss six more groups in the World Cup, which begin 1 week from today. Can you believe it, Paulie?
Oh, boy. Buckle up. Thank goodness it's going to get here. I'm finding bets I didn't even know I had made on the World Cup.
Well, we will recap those bets at some point, but let's begin with Group G. Let's get right into it. This is the Belgium group, I think I can confidently say, with my much more limited soccer knowledge than you, the golden generation of Belgium here on the twilight side. Salah still playing for Egypt, and we also have, oh, speaking of geopolitical, we also have Iran here and New Zealand.
Always controversial, yeah. New Zealand.
There's a real situation where the U.S. and Iran can meet in the round of 32. I think it's if they both finish group runner-up,
yes,
they meet in the round of 32.
That is correct.
Which would be, I'm rooting for that for the chaos of it all.
Right.
Yeah.
Just the absurdity of it, because, I mean, you know, people would say stuff and things would happen and it would be dumb and wildly entertaining.
Yes, that is correct. They both end up second place in groups D and G. Those two groups happen to meet next in that particular matchup. Belgium wins this. What's your bet in this group?
Yeah, so I have New Zealand to finish last. You see minus 200 on your screen. I have it at minus 150. That was available this morning. And I'll use that just to point out that prices on the World Cup will vary quite a bit. So please shop around as many books as you can to find the best price. Cause yeah, I mean, minus 150 and minus 200 are obviously rated different. But New Zealand's by far the worst team in this group. Belgium, of course, is the best. Iran had a really good qualifying campaign in Asia, and Egypt is solid. You know, they haven't gotten out of the group stage before at a World Cup, but they have Salah, you mentioned. They have Omar Mamouche, who plays for Man City on the other wing. So they've got talent, and they just have a lot more upside than New Zealand, which has never won a World Cup game, has very, you know, just kind of limited offensively, not great defensively, but they'll try to rely on that to scrape through. But I think New Zealand to finish last, if you get close to the minus 150 range, that's my play.
New Zealand to finish last in a group with Belgium, Egypt, and Iran. Group G. Let's go to Group H. Spain, Uruguay, Saudi Arabia, and Cape Verde. Oh, let me try this. I can give you the 1, 2, 3, 4 exact on this. Ready? Okay. This is easy. Just the order I just said it. Spain 1, yeah. Uruguay 2, Saudi Arabia 3, Cape Verde. First time ever World Cup for Cape Verde. They're 4. Yeah. It's got to be that way, right? Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously the chalk. I actually like, I have a bet on Saudi Arabia to finish last, to finish bottom at plus 180. So yeah, I mean, Spain is the best team, second best team in the tournament. So they're in. Uruguay is a solid, you know, kind of second cut team. So this is a pretty top heavy group from those two perspectives. So it's going to come down to Saudi Arabia and Cape Verde finish last. You mentioned Cape Verde has not been in a World Cup, but they've kind of been slowly on the rise in Africa over the last decade or so, better results at the Cup of Nations and things like that. And Saudi Arabia is just a very limited team. I mean, people remember maybe they beat Argentina in the opener last time, 4 years ago.
And then Argentina went on to win the cup, right? Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Saudi Arabia literally had two goals on, it was like two shots, maybe three shots. So it was not as though Saudi Arabia had this masterclass and upset Argentina. I mean, it was ball go in net. And that worked out well for the Saudis. So Cape Verde's been on the rise. They have a lot of energy. I think they'll bring that to the World Cup. So at plus 180, I like Saudi Arabia to finish last, thinking that Cape Verde can get a result against Saudi Arabia and maybe pull the upset.
I like the Paul Carr bet on teams to finish last strategy in the group stage. I like this as a general thing. All right.
It is fun. You occasionally get like hosed on the last day when someone doesn't have something to play for and there's some, you know, something like that. But it is kind of a fun one to have teams to root against in different ways.
Group I. It's always awkward to say that. Group I.
Group I.
France, clearly the cream of the crop. I know that from your previous bets of France to win it all. Yeah. Senegal and Norway, one would think, are vying for second place. And then Iraq. Mm-hmm. Man, oh, man. Yeah. Bringing up the proverbial rear here in Group I. I will say this about Norway that people should know, if people care about the qualifying phase, Norway absolutely crushing their opponents in the qualifying phase, winning all 8 matches and scoring 37 goals. Is that a typo?
Just the greatest goal scorer in the world.
Erling Haaland had 16 goals in 8 qualifiers. So that's a pretty good scoring rate.
Dang.
Wait, did you just catch Kelly Bidlin trying to just impress us with his soccer?
Erling Haaland. I'm obsessed with Erling. He's the Josh Allen of soccer. Okay. He's incredible.
It's this guy.
That's my guy.
Yeah. He'd make a heck of a tight end or wide receiver too, I think, if he wanted to use his hands.
And yet he chose soccer.
Yeah.
What do you got here?
I like Senegal in this one. I'd like taking a shot on Senegal here. I mean, so I have them to win the group at plus 800 here. It's obviously a long shot. If you'd rather play Senegal to make the quarterfinals, you know, they don't have to win the group to do that. You can find that around plus 700. So I think that's reasonable too. That's the bet I discovered I had last night. I don't know when I made that, but I was like, oh, I already have Senegal to make the quarters. But I also have them to win the group at plus 800. Look, this is a solid team, a veteran team. Sadio Mane, a former Liverpool forward, is leading the attack. They played the U.S. on Sunday, and he's still lightning quick. And Senegal can hit you on the counter like few teams. So a lot of speed and ability to do a lot of things. The defense was really good in qualifying. So I think they have a shot here. Norway, of course, has Haaland. They have Martin Odegaard from Arsenal, a couple of the better players in the world, but never been on this stage, a little bit thinner overall. And France is France. You're just kind of hoping they play their conservative style and Senegal can, you know, sneak a win there or a point and wins in other spots, something like that. So I have Senegal to win the group at plus 800.
So again, just to clarify for folks, Paul has you, was it you had France to win it all, or was that Valika? I'm getting confused.
I do.
You
have France to win it all also.
You have France to win it all, but you have the 8-1 on Senegal to win group I.
You got it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's try to squeeze in group J here, which is Argentina's group, the defending World Cup champion, Argentina. Messi in his final World Cup, one would assume. Austria, Algeria, and Jordan with their World Cup debut. Wow. Isn't that a 1-2-3 four in that order as well?
That's definitely the chalk. I like Algeria a little bit more. So I have an exacta here on Argentina, Algeria to finish 1-2 at plus 250. It's kind of a way of saying Algeria is going to finish second, but getting a better price on it because you assume Argentina is going to win the group either way. But Algeria, again, they've got some wingers. Riyad Mahrez used to play for City is there, among others. Austria has a very high risk, higher reward type of style, like Red Bull style in soccer parlance, where, you know, they press you a lot and may create tons of opportunities, but also might create tons going the other way. So I think Algeria might be able to take advantage of that on the wings. So I have the Argentina Algeria exacta at plus 250.
I like it. Argentina Algeria a 1-2, a 1-2 exacta. Okay, we'll get to groups K and L. K and L, LMNOP after that. We'll see. More World Cup with Paul on the other side. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Now, this right here is some exciting stuff. Patrick Maher, who loves soccer and knows his soccer. He is going to host the World Soccer Betting Preview, full 1 hour, hosted by Patrick Maher today at 1 p.m. Eastern, right after this show.
That's right.
Former USA player and broadcaster Christopher Sullivan joins the show alongside Alex Crook and Will Gavin for a complete breakdown from the group stage all the way through the knockout rounds with best bets and the angles you need before the opening whistle. Don't miss it right here on VSiN today, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern. Hosted by the great Patrick Maher. He loves soccer.
Oh, he loves soccer. I was talking with him a bit about it last week. He's pumped, doing double duty today, doing this show, doing normal VSiN tonight on Mad Dog Sports Radio. So great stuff from Maher, man. I can't wait to check that out. It'll be a great show.
We get tweet speed of the book, Jason Stark. You're right, Kelly, giving up Dante DiVincenzo sucked. Still would be nice if they could have found a way to keep him, but that's what many wanted.
Yeah.
Shamit's emergence has helped heal that wound a bit. Montreal Max.
The Shamit stat I just saw. Sorry, Gil. Over New York's last seven playoff games, okay, dating back to game three in the Sixers series, Landry Shamit is shooting over 68% from the floor and 74% from three. He is 20 for 27 on three-pointers in that time span.
Is that good?
It's pretty good. Yeah. It's pretty good.
Montreal Max at Stardust Book. I was concerned about Kostyuk playing Andreeva, who seemed to harness her own emotions last week, but as a Russian who Marta has history with coming at this time where after each match, Marta has been overwhelmed talking about the realities on the ground back home. I'm not sure where he was going with that. Montreal Max, maybe got cut off. PAW, Tom Tango talking about the NL Cy Young point system of Tom Tango, tried and true. Sanchez at 43.35, Miz at 39.3, Otani 38.2. Burns 34.15, Harrison 32.85. That's how Tango's tried and true formula breaks it down right now here on June 4th. Futures bet, just secured my MLB All-Star Game tickets that's being played here in Philly. Will the AL score any runs in this game? NL pitchers this year are just historically excellent. That's a great point. You got to get those guys every inning, one by one.
Oh, God, yeah, good point.
Larry Fresh. The guy who ran out onto the court might be banned for life, but how much did he make on Polly Market and Kalshi that someone would run on the court during game one? Maybe it was worth it. You know, man. What, Larry? You know what, Larry Fresh? I guarantee that's what happened.
That's a great point. It makes me even more depressed about that.
Yeah. Yeah. They got to get rid of markets like that.
Yep.
Love them. Got to get rid of markets like that. Patrick Kelly, Cape Verde. Out of meteorological slash hurricane season news and into World Cup third place group contender. I like it. I'm a weather geek. Cape Verde, by the way, we're talking about population. Mm-hmm. You know, are you familiar with the book Soccernomics, Kelly, back in the day?
No.
Soccernomics was a book by Simon Kuiper and Stefan Szymanski. And basically, it was all about international soccer. And it said that global success depends heavily on population size, wealth, and experience. Talking about other things, but that was a big theme in it.
Checks out.
What's Cape Verde's population size?
They are 491,000 people.
And they are not winning the World Cup, according to Soccernomics. Mike Rouse, can you ask Paul if there's anything to take from last week's USA-Senegal match? Let's start there. We'll bring Paul Carr back in. Kind enough to join us because we've got a couple more groups to get to with Paul. What about that? What about USA Senegal? Which you were there for that, right?
I was, yeah. What I took away from it, I mean, so Christian Pulisic, who's the U.S. best player, probably the best well-known player, he hadn't scored a goal since December for club or country, 21 straight games. But he looked great in that game. He had a goal and assist all in the first half, and it was kind of a microcosm of how good the U.S. attack looked in that first half. They were just getting at it, pushing up from the wings, creating chances in the box, et cetera, all the things you want to see them do against a team that, you know, is probably a little better than them or pretty close to even, at least with the lineup that was out there. Now, the U.S. has plenty of question marks on defense still. Their best defender, Chris Richards, not sure if he's going to be ready for the first match of the tournament. Not sure what his status will be, so that's not great. So they have some things to clean up at the back. But we saw the upside there in the first half in the attack. And if the U.S. attacks like that, and they should be able to, especially in their first two group games where they're going to have more of the ball, then they should, you know, be able to win that group and get a favorable knockout round matchup.
Scrabble Star also has a great question for you. He said, Gil, there's a series of ongoing friendlies with both World Cup qualifiers and non-qualifiers competing. Could you ask Paul if it's common for the World Cup teams to play a style where they're not showing much for their upcoming foes to see, like in the NFL preseason, for instance?
Yep. You will see the whole range of possibilities in that some teams want to get as much time as they can with, you know, their starting 11 or close enough to it and do exactly what they're going to do at the World Cup. And some teams will almost throw out the B team or even play a different formation than they're going to try and throw people off. So it's the whole gamut of possibilities as far as what teams will do. There is kind of an NFL draft type of thing where you don't trust any rumor or anything that's coming out, or you're at least raising an eyebrow if something weird pops up, like, I don't know if that's actually going to happen, that kind of thing.
Okay, let us continue. Let's go to Group K. It's getting really awkward with the letters, with groups here.
No, all right, terrible.
This is Portugal and Colombia. I'll pair them together as the favorites in this group. Portugal is actually the favorite, minus 200. Colombia is 2-1. And that's the Democratic Republic of Congo, 14-1. Mm-hmm. And Uzbekistan making their debut here. At 35-1, as Kelly pointed out last week, Italy has to watch all of this and be like, really, they're in it too? Uzbekistan's in it as well?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Italy's probably, you mentioned Norway earlier. Norway torched Italy twice in qualifying, and that's what sent Italy to a playoff. And then they, you know, laid an egg in the playoff. So Group K, though, I like Colombia to win this group. I got a plus 250, which I think is still out there. So this is obviously a Portugal-Colombia group from a who's going to win. And what this is really going to come down to is maybe the best game in the group stage on paper, Portugal-Colombia, the group finale in Miami, which is just going to be an insane atmosphere. But I like Colombia in this group. They have Luis Diaz from Bayern up top, who can attack as well as anybody in the world. They got several guys who support him very nicely. James Rodriguez, you might remember from the 2014 World Cup, is still going in midfield and making them run. So, like, he doesn't play super consistently with a club, but he puts on the yellow Colombia jersey and turns into Superman again. So he's still there pulling the strings. So, yeah, I like Colombia. I think they got a real shot to win this group. I like it at plus 250 is where I got it.
Okay. Colombia, plus 250 from Paul to win Group K. Group L, I'm contractually obligated to make this comment, as we do with the Toronto Maple Leafs, not having won the Stanley Cup since 1967. England has not won the World Cup since 1966. Here we are with Harry Kane still playing for him. Croatia, Ghana, and Panama round out the group.
And if England finally wins the World Cup again and it's on U.S. soil, I mean, we're just going to have to live with that as, like, you know, American soccer fans that English fans look down on already. It's like, if there's one thing I'm rooting against just from a fan perspective, I'm like, I don't want England to win the World Cup here.
Come on. Are we going to have to leave, Paul?
I don't mind if they win it, but yeah, not here.
We have to get the country back?
What happens if
I think that's it. I think we're going to get annexed again. Yeah.
250 years. All right, we gave it our best run.
Yeah.
Ken Burns.
More taxation without representation.
Burns has to stand by for another episode of his American Revolution documentary. What do you like here in this group?
So let's see. I play Panama to advance. This is the rare two advance play that I think is worthwhile. They're obviously fourth in the group from a power rankings type of perspective, but I have them to advance at +220. Panama has, they've given the U.S. and Mexico kind of the giants in the region. They've given them lots of trouble the last few years. Thomas Christensen, their manager, has been there for a while and just knows how to play against better teams. They have Coco Carrasquilla in the midfield who really runs things there. And so I think they have a real shot to get out of this group. I mean, you got to pull one upset essentially and not get destroyed in the other two games. So, 3 points and a -1 goal difference is probably getting you through. You get to 4 points, you're almost certainly going to advance. So I like Panama to advance here. Again, you pull one upset, you hang around in other games, you're probably going through. And I think Panama has the coaching and the players to do that.
All right. Paul Carr, Senior Director of Media and Business Operations at True Media Networks, here are to review his 6 plays. Groups G through L from today: New Zealand to finish last in Group G at -150. Saudi Arabia to finish last in Group H at +180. Senegal to win Group I at 8-1. And then an exacta in Group J: Argentina and Algeria 1-2 at +250. Colombia to win Group K at +250. And Panama, we just mentioned, to advance from Group L at +220. We mentioned on the last show, or you mentioned on the last show, that when it comes to the United States, the round of 16 is par. Is that correct? Round of 16 is par. Anything worse than that, we're bogeying. Anything better than that, we're birdieing. In your heart of hearts, though, what I didn't ask you is, where do you think we do end up?
Yeah, this is fun. I just submitted a piece to Yahoo on essentially, do you trust the U.S. in the group stage? And I worked through all my emotions of the pros and cons. And I really think, and maybe I'm still riding that first half from Senegal, but I think this U.S. team will win the group. I just think they have the upside. Again, they're going to be not significantly better, but better than two of the teams, and they can hang right with Turkey as well. So I think they win the group. You get a favorable matchup. You should, because you're playing a third place team. So I think they really should get to the round of 16, and I think they will. Beyond that, then you're just starting to, then you're going to run into a better team almost certainly in the round of 16. So I think that they will par this tournament essentially. But you win a knockout game, you're going to get lots of excitement. It should be fun.
Par. That's it. Par. Okay.
We'll take it as long as England doesn't win.
As Paul mentioned,
all
of his soccer stuff at Yahoo as well. Paul, thank you so much for not only today, but the other day as well. Double duty both days. Appreciate it.
You bet. 1 week to go.
Stormy Bonnetone next. Stanley Cup playoff, or final, I should say. Game number 2 next.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
You know what we haven't talked about here? Drake London the other day signed 4-year, $141 million contract extension with the Atlanta Falcons. And all three of us, you, me, Danny Higgins, we're all like, okay, he's good and he has all the potential in the world, but what did he do to deserve a 4-year, $141 million contract extension? And the Green Bay Packers just said, watch this.
Yeah.
They just signed Christian Watson to a 4-year, $110.5 million contract extension that includes $31 million signing bonus. He's not frustrating at all as a wide receiver.
It's incredible. I mean, he's the most frustrating player in the NFL, possibly. But most of the wide receiver position, I mean, like, we all know the talent is there, but this guy cannot stay on the field. I mean, it feels like it's been 19 different hamstring injuries over the last 4 seasons.
Remember how Terry McLaurin had to fight for a long-term deal last year? Because he's a little older.
I was just going
to
bring this up.
It was a 3 years, $96 million, I think he ended up getting. He's probably looking at this like, are you serious? These guys, really? Christian Watson just got this? Come on.
10 games, 15, 9, and 11. Christian Watson over his 4 years.
Real quick before we get to Stormy, because you never know what we talk about, what resonates. Everybody wants to talk about the guy who ran on the court. Corbin doesn't. Corbin wants to talk about, he's mad at us for talking about the children holding hands in Europe with the athletes. He says, good morning, guys. A little rant. The kids holding hands with athletes isn't about you guys. Imagine the child being able to tell his friends and family for life he got to hold hands with Messi for a World Cup game. In the wise words of Gracie, don't ruin the magic.
Yeah, I said it was awesome for the kids. I'm not doubting that.
I mean, if you get Messi, I guess.
Well, like, they could also just get those group of kids together and have them hang out with Messi for like 5 minutes before.
Trip Tepper, NBA should fine the Spurs $1 million for failure to secure the court. That fan should get 60 days in jail. Banning from NBA arenas is a slap on the wrist. We don't want a Monica Seles level incident. Spurs security should be embarrassed. It's a great point by Trip.
Yeah, kind of agree with all of it.
And James Fessler, a real punitive ban would include all events at NBA arenas like concerts and not just NBA games. I think most of us have self-banned during the regular season at this point.
Man, these guys are getting creative. I like it.
Yeah, man. That kind of stuff resonates with people.
Yeah.
Stormy Bonatoni joins us. She is the co-host, along with Jonathan Von Tobel, of Money Moves, which comes on each and every Monday through Friday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. She also is, by the way, a very big Vegas Golden Knights fan. Are we allowed to say that on air? I believe we are. Stormy joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. True, yes?
Yes. And I think, too, when you're born and raised in the city and then also worked for the team, you're allowed, right? Like, yes. It's pretty clear.
Your level of excitement with a game one victory as compared to, say, winning the cup a few years back, as opposed to getting to the final in year one, that had to be right up there with those. Yes.
Well, so the game five win against Florida, when they actually won the cup, I was in the building for, and it was just a cacophony of goal scoring. It was unbelievable. And it was just one goal after another. And there was no doubt that they were going to win and close out Florida that night. And being in the building for all of that emotion and just screaming at the top of your lungs every time there was a goal scored and you knew it was over in the second period was pretty electric. But sitting on my couch and watching game one of this series and thinking truly it was because of how back and forth it was, it was one of the most exciting games that I've seen in hockey.
Yeah.
Yeah. And granted, I'd probably feel differently about it if Carolina ended up winning, but because they didn't, it was a masterful back and forth fun game to watch. It was awesome.
It was just unbelievable. I think Todd wished I was also like anybody who missed this game. They are lesser for it. Yeah. Now I establish you as a Vegas Golden Knights fan, sort of to go to the next part here, which is you're not just a fangirl, though. You like Carolina tonight.
I do. And I think we talk about it a lot. There's a difference in betting with your head versus betting with your heart. And I bet with my heart in the preseason because I do it every year. And I have a Vegas Golden Knights 10-1 future on them to win it. So we love that. But as for tonight, I do feel I would be shocked if Carolina was not able to bounce back on home ice today. And they have proven time and time again from the regular season and even their lone loss in the playoffs prior to game one that they are a bounce back team. They haven't lost back-to-back games since mid-January. And the fact that you get the opportunity to rebound on home ice, where granted, I know home ice in the postseason hasn't meant nearly as much as maybe it does in other sports for the NHL, they had the best home record of any team in the National Hockey League this season as well. And I think they're going to get some things figured out. I think they're going to play with a lot more defensive structure today. And even though it's a hefty price, I wanted to avoid the regulation 60-minute play because we've seen how many of these games have ended up going in overtime. But I would be pretty shocked if Carolina didn't even the set tonight.
Totals at 6. Game one, this is just sort of anecdotal, but it felt like everybody had the under. Felt that way.
Yeah.
And then it was over before you could, before you could blink. 6 goals already scored within the first 2 periods. What about tonight? How do you feel about the total?
Yeah, with a 5-4 final, they nearly doubled up that 5.5 total we had in game one, right? But I have been one of those people that is pretty steadfast in my belief that this is going to be a lower scoring series. Obviously, as you laid it out, that theory took a hit. However, I don't think that it's good form to hyper overreact to one game either. The Canes have had 10 of their 13 games this postseason with 5 or fewer goals scored. Vegas is kind of a depends on the night kind of team. We saw it last series against Colorado. High scoring game, low scoring game, high scoring game, low scoring game. They're really good at adjusting, which I think is going to be key tonight John Tortorella's like biggest complaint about game one for Vegas, and rightfully so, was turnovers. They had three turnovers that end up straight in the back of their net. I don't think for one Jack Eichel is going to do that two games in a row. Shea Theodore had that bad pinch. Noah Hanifin should be a lot better. Neither goalie was any good either, and these have been the two best statistical netminders in the entire postseason. I know I've had my gripes with Frederik Andersen and questioned how much he's been tested, but even he's better than that. And I think that from a defensive standpoint, his guys will play better in front of him as well. I mean, you knew that it was Vegas's night and that it was going to be uncharacteristically high scoring when Braden McNabb has three assists. Homeboy had seven assists all regular season. He has three in one night. Like, please get away from you. Okay.
Oh, wow.
But these are two teams that have really legit defensive structure. And given the must win element that I think you have, if you're Carolina, there's going to be a lot of fight on both sides.
Yeah. The Vegas lifers came up big. Shea Theodore, one goal, two assists. Great game for him. Carlson scored as well in game one. And you're right. I mean, what Torts was talking about, as soon as they stopped passing the puck across the ice and turning the puck over, all went well for the Vegas Golden Knights in game one. By the way, John Tortorella, the Vegas Golden Knights, 20 wins, 4 losses, and 1 that went to OT, right? 24-1 since he took over as head coach with 8 games remaining in the regular season. It's just amazing. The game winner the other night, of course, was from Tomáš Hertl on that great, like, just unbelievable pass from Sissons. You have a prop bet on Hertl tonight.
Yeah, he has been someone who really, really struggled early on in the postseason. It's been pretty well documented now. He had a career-long 29-game goalless drought. But you mentioned the game winner in game one. He's got 4 goals and 8 points his last 8 games, 2 goals and 3 points his last 3. The confidence is really being rebuilt. He's gotten back to his usual time on ice numbers after John Tortorella really slashed his minutes. He's back on the top power play. And when you have more confidence overall in your game, you're more apt to shoot the puck. His shots on goal prop tonight is 1.5, and it's around -105, -106. He's only averaging 1.7 shots on goal per game in the postseason, which is why the price is so cheap. And because of all the struggles he had early on, he's had 3 shots on goal the last 3 games and averaged nearly 2.5 per game in the regular season. I really think he started to regulate. Again, he's found that confidence that still getting 1.5 on the shots on goal prop, I think, is just too low for the way that he's playing right now.
All right, Stormy, on Carolina tonight, -155 to bounce back, even up this series at 1 game apiece. She is on the under again at 6, and Tomáš Hertl over 1.5 shots on goal at -106. Question for both of you. Have you all ever been to these? You know how the NBA, like in the NBA finals, the away team opens up the arena and everybody shows up and they watch it on the big screen? Mm-hmm. They're doing this at T-Mobile. They did it in game one. They're doing it again tonight. Have you ever been to any of those, Stormy?
No, and this is going to sound terrible. I actually said last night to my husband when we were watching the Knicks game, and you see all the Knicks fans outside of MSG just all piled on each other. I said, one thing about me is I am never going to be that person. Yeah. I will, like, there is nothing about that seems interesting or fun to me.
Interesting, because I thought about it. I'm like, should I go to this?
I don't know why it's similar, or I'm thinking of it similarly, but like championship parade, very cool. That sounds miserable. Yep. Sounds miserable.
I went to San Francisco Giants.
Just like fans gathered for non-sporting events.
San Francisco Giants parades were great in San Francisco. You have to have the right perch for it.
Yes.
Though, right?
Yeah, you got to plan it out right.
But the thing you're talking about, the Knicks, I mean, the ridiculousness outside of MSG is one thing. I'm just talking about enjoying it with 18,000 of your best friends.
Yeah, I'm good.
No, you're good too.
Okay. I'm good.
Right. No, I like watching games at home by myself.
Well, yeah, you have too. Described off air that it gets a little nerve wracking for you, so I understand.
You know what I've been thinking about for 90 seconds? Why does Braden McNabb hate to pass the puck? That's my biggest takeaway from that entire segment. 7 assists.
Thank you, Stormy.
He's
listening.
A defenseman. Let him live.
Let him live, Kelly. Exactly. Thank you, Stormy. Crack next on A Numbers Game.